This is a Slog Audio Caching Podcast, produced by Paul Connor Packy of St. Louis, Missouri. December 9, 2006. Episode number 48. Interview with Laura Millian, a.k.a. Two Cats.
Welcome to episode number 48 of the Slaga Geocaching Podcast. This podcast is published under the Creative Commons No Derivative License. To contact me about these episodes, send an email to podcast@geostl.com. A few notes before we get on with the interview with Laura Millian. There are three new geocaching podcasts that have appeared on the scene lately. I have a link to each podcast on my webpage at podcast.geostl.com. The first is called GeoTalk. It originates from Australia and is created by a geocacher named Spindock Bob. He does interviews and highlights caches in various areas in Australia. The second is Jersey Geocaching, created by a young man named Jonathan Decker. He is still learning how to create and publish a podcast. His first episode is from the field where he and a friend go hunting for what he calls baby caches. The third geocaching podcast originates from Detroit, Michigan, and is being put together by two cachers from that area. Episodes will start being published in 2007, which might be a combination of both audio and video podcasts. Here's a quick promo from the Cachemaniac crew that I promised I would include in this episode.
Hello, Slaga Podcast listeners. This is Daryl W4 and Firefly 03 with the new Cachemaniacs Podcast, here to give you a warning.
We found a new sport. We're hunting for geocacher interviews. Since we're stuck here in Michigan, we could really use your help. If you know anyone that might make an interesting interview for the show, drop us an email at cachemaniacs@gmail.com. Perhaps it's even you.
We're getting some great interviews right now, and starting in January, you'll be able to check them out on the podcast. You can find our show at cachemaniacs.com.
About the rest of this podcast, I met Laura Millian and her daughter at the 2006 Slaga Fall Picnic. She is fairly new to geocaching. As we were talking, I learned she had a background in media production and was now working at Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. Last week, Elaine and I drove an hour to meet Laura to see some of the equipment she uses, to talk about the logistics of setting up video cameras at MOGA 2007, and to get her geocaching story. At the time of the recording, she had 95 cache finds. However, by the time that this podcast is published, she will have reached her 100 find milestone. The audio starts out with us meeting in the parking lot of a restaurant in Edwardsville, Illinois. We drive to the campus to the library where Laura works. After some chit-chat, I officially start the interview. We discuss the work she does on campus and how she got started in geocaching. As usual, when you hear this sound, it means there has been a change in location or a break in the conversation. It wasn't supposed to be this cold today.
No.
We need to get to my 100th tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah, we're going to go down probably to Millstadt to cut a Christmas tree and then get a couple of those in Columbia because they're all in parks. And
Oh, it's the Steve Bromley ones because Steve put a whole bunch down there in Columbia.
Yeah, I noticed his thing, so I figured we'd do that.
You live not too far from campus,
yeah,
so it's nice and convenient.
South, yeah.
I suspect you moved there to be close to the campus?
I moved to this area to go to school. The house that I'm currently living in, some friends of mine own. He got transferred unexpectedly to Atlanta. So I offered to live in the house because I was a student at the time while they were selling it. They didn't sell it. My then boyfriend decided he was going to buy the house, and 2 years later we got married, so I just kind of stayed in the house. I wasn't working at SIU at the time. I got the job after Amanda was born. It's one of those things I never quite, you know, I did about 10 different jobs after I left school here and finally went back here.
Where we are, we have a lot more snow on the ground, so
yeah.
I suspected that if it was the same, we'd be having to chip the caches out.
That was another thing I thought about last week. It's like, you know, with all that ice and snow we had, do I really want to be digging? You know, especially with the party. We had the two parties that evening. It's like, I don't want to really go out there. And
You were at the Christmas party, and did you have another Christmas party after
that?
Yeah,
there was another one right after that, yeah.
Well, I'm wired and live right now, so.
Oh, goody.
But I've got
thank you for
your hookup here in my pocket, okay. But I'll also hook you up as soon as
as we get some place where we can put the lapel on.
So just remember, Amanda, don't say anything that you don't want to record it.
I'm
not going to say a word. Thank you.
You know,
a little cursing, Amanda.
Now, if she talked like a sailor, I might keep that on there just because it would be unique.
She's got certain words that are bloody this and bloody that. We watch a lot of British programs.
Oh, bloody heck.
But,
Mom,
but
only three.
What?
Only three.
Well, yeah, but we watch them off. We watch them a lot, yes.
What are they?
Chronicles of Narnia, Harry Potter, and Rosemary and Time.
We were watching some of those British mysteries on PBS there for a while. We're at SIU. This is the Lovejoy Library where I work. I work in the basement, so I'm not a librarian.
I grew up in the Chicago area. I came here to SIU to go to school and just never left. I got the first job here at SIU when Amanda was a year old, about 11 and a half years ago. I love it a lot because I play with all sorts of cool equipment and, you know, I don't have to pay for any of it. Because we have our desktop at home, but we also have a laptop. And the laptop's not hooked up to the internet. So sometimes I have to go to the laptop so she can be on the internet for homework. And in fact, last year she was doing something. She was doing some research online and I had told her to get to some chores. And I walked in and she's still on the computer. I was like, are you playing games? I told you to get I think it was a litter box or something. I'm still trying to download homework. If we had high-speed internet, I'd be done by now. Attitude aside, she had a point. Finally, I looked into it, and I got DSL, and what a difference.
I've been known to carry several cameras on my back.
So if I'm going to have a backup, a second camera, why don't I just go ahead and get the night shot one? Because a lot of stuff happens at night, and I've had to rely on other people to use their cameras. You know, some of those geocachers like to party at night and sit around the campfire, and that's where the good content is. I brought some maps of Mark Twain to give you an idea of where we're going to be.
I've never been up to that.
And I still plan on going up there next Thursday. This is Paul Konopacki, and this is a podcast interview with Laura Million and her daughter, and we're in the basement of the library where she works.
At SIUE.
And what's your daughter's name?
This is Amanda Million.
Hi.
There you go.
And together you're geocaching under a
Two cats.
And why two cats?
She picked the name. We have two cats, and she's an animal lover. She just wanted to call two cats, and I figured, well, we're two people, and why not? I'll get my own name, or she'll get her own name, so we can cache separately. And as she gets older, she's only 12 right now, so she needs me to drive her to the caches. But eventually, she'll go out on her own.
What hours do you regularly work here?
Yeah, Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30 is my usual hours.
Do you interface with the public?
I work mostly with the faculty. Once in a while, we'll have student projects that we do, but it's mostly the faculty. My previous job was working with audiovisual services here at SIUE. I thought I was getting the job to do video, but it ends up that I was hired on to do computer graphics, which I knew nothing about at the time. 5 years ago, I took the job with the Faculty Technology Center to get away from the video, but being the only person who not only knows the studio, but knows video, as video things come up, they ask me to do it. Video, I'll do video editing, streaming video. 2 years ago, I shot 10 small clips for the nursing department for basic skills nursing, how to put an IV in, how to change a dressing, things like that. We made 10 little clips. We shot them. We edited them.
How did the projects get to you? Is it somebody in the faculty that says, wouldn't it be nice if we had a video that did
pretty
this?
Much so, yeah. So most of the time, they have an idea, and then it's up to me to come up with, in the case of the nursing videos, they knew what they wanted to do, and they were just demonstration videos. So we shot them and then did the voiceover afterwards. I prefer doing it the other way, where we have a script so I know what to shoot. Either way will work. In this case, being a demonstration, you know, it's step by step. They have to do it the same each way, so we shot it. After we edited it and finished it, then we went in and added a voiceover over it. And those are being used by their students for the nursing skills classes because they have to be proficient at all the different types of skills. And so the students have these videos to refresh themselves with the proper procedures. This is a full university. So we have all, you know, business, nursing. We have an engineering school. We have a new school of pharmacy that has just opened up. Of course, the businesses, the fine arts, the music and the dance and the theater and all those things. I just finished another video for the School of Business. They want to be able to use this to promote their study abroad program, where they send their students to foreign countries to study for either a week or a month or a semester, and they wanted to have a promotional piece. But yeah, projects come and go. Video, honestly, is like 1/10 of my job duties. When I do have a project, it does take up a lot of time, but my main job is to help the faculty put their course material online, help them develop their courses so they can teach online classes. A lot of faculty believe that, well, I'll just throw my syllabus and a few readings up there, and that's it. That's only a small part of online learning.
Is it optional? Is it the teacher who decides? hey, I think this would be cool, or is it the dean is saying, by 2007, everybody needs to have some type of online component?
Both. For the majority, it's the faculty that want to be online. Many of them still... Oh, hello.
Hey.
How you doing?
Okay, I'm leaving.
Okay, I didn't know you were here.
Yeah, I'm just here.
I'm being recorded on a podcast. This is one of my geocaching people. He does a podcast, and I don't know why he wants to talk to me about it, but...
You're the only one left to talk to. I talked to everybody else.
My boss, Jennifer.
Hi.
I had a feeling you'd probably be here at some point today. Amanda's stuck in the...
Yeah.
I don't know if you were in there. Okay.
I just turned the lights off, so I was... When I got here, because we were on all night.
Oh, okay.
They were on, and I was like... Just turn this off, I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll see you Thursday.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Many of the faculty want the online portion because it takes away things that they have to do in their classroom. They can test online. They can use the grade book online. They can post their syllabus and their readings and their homework assignments so they don't have to pass out paperwork for students. Most universities are using online education, and the students are requesting it. I mean, a lot of students are coming from even high schools that are using online. Apple has their iTunes that a lot of people use for podcasting. They've opened up a whole section just for universities, and right now it's free, where as a university, we can use part of their servers, part of their equipment, be able to store our podcasts on, and then our students would just go to that site and download their lectures, download guest speakers. Mostly the instructors use it to record their lectures, so the students, if they miss something, they can go back to the podcast and listen to it. Or if they miss a class completely, they can go back.
Do you come here to hide sometimes?
No, because they still know where to find me.
Obviously, your boss is new.
Yeah, I know. Basically, what they do in our video studio, I usually just do control room work. So I do the editing, dubbing. In the studio, they'll have students come in and do student projects. If the faculty think they're going to be missing a class, they can actually come in here and record their lecture. Maybe the psychology class will come in here and they'll do role playing. The public speaking class comes in and they'll do their class projects on camera. Money comes around once or twice a year where, you know, spend it or lose it, where we'll upgrade the equipment when we can. For me personally, I wish it would be training. Been so long outside of the real broadcast world. I'm pretty much self-taught on most of this equipment. You know, I used 3/4-inch videotape back when, you know, I learned how to edit with very primitive editing systems. You know, the techniques are always going to be there, but as far as how to use the equipment, my days are never the same. Everything changes. You know, I walk in thinking, okay, this is going to be a quiet day, and then something blows up and we need to handle that.
How big is the department that supports the stuff that you do?
8 people, but we all sort of have different things that we do. There's 2 of us that do production, meaning if a faculty member needs help putting course material online, we can do that. Then there's myself and another woman that does the training. So we teach the faculty how to put their course material online. 2 of our gentlemen work with all the web pages on campus. Another gentleman that does most of the, well, 2 of them actually handle all of the computers, hardware, software, that type of stuff. The dean of the library, he's very technically oriented. He knows that, you know, we need good, strong technical support. From working and talking with other universities, I'm really amazed at what kind of support we are able to give our faculty compared to other universities. There's several Southern Illinois University campuses. The main one everybody thinks about is Carbondale. They've been around for 100-some years.
Oh, so SIU is a general area, but there are many colleges.
Right, but we're all under the same board of directors. So you've got SIU Carbondale, SIU Edwardsville. We have the SIU Alton School of Dental Medicine, SIU Medical School in Springfield. I don't have anybody really that I clear the final product through except for the person I'm working with.
So I say, oh, I like this. It's great.
You know,
Or could you tweak this?
You know, when I'm done, I'll probably show my bosses, you know, the video that I finished just so they can see it. In case somebody mentions it to them, they'll know what they're talking about. You know, like in the business world, I'm working for a client. I'm working for the School of Business, and the School of Business has people that they have to show through and say, is this okay? Is this not okay? Who is this person's title? How do we do this? It has to be university related. All the dorms, all the resident halls are online. Each student has internet connection, not just the one room. Each student has a connection. So if there's 3 in a room, they've got 3 connections. Like you said, every single one of them are online, emailing their friends, you know, downloading YouTube, whatever. They've now included a tech fee, which is going to go for the infrastructure. It's going to go for to help support some of the what labs they're going to keep. It's going to help bring people into our department so we can help the students better. The campus is now wireless, but we still have a lot of black spots on campus where you can't bring a laptop or you can't bring your wireless, because a lot of the classrooms are now getting hooked up so you can just bring a laptop in and use it right in class rather than taking notes. You can type it out, instant message your friends, check the weather, check the sports scores. You know, you're not allowed to have your cell phone on during class unless it's an emergency. And
back in my day, we never had that problem.
No, exactly.
People didn't bring their phones in because the cable wouldn't go that far.
That's right. We were being checked for cheating on our arms. You know, they make us roll up our sleeves in class to make sure we didn't have
it's
any.
It's a lost art.
Yes, it is. I bet you could get away with that now because of
it's a tattoo.
Right, yeah. Nobody would even realize what that was because it's not digital. Yes, exactly. We got involved in geocaching about a year ago. We started out letterboxing, and we had taken a class at the Shaw Nature Reserve in letterboxing and had a really great time. You know, you have your little stamps and your ink pads, and you go same way with geocaching, but you have specific clues. You don't have coordinates. And you go to the place, you find your little box, and you stamp your pad, and you stamp their pad. The very first one we found here was actually on campus here at SIU. It was this big container. It had geocaching.com. This is a geocache. I had heard about geocaching, and I said, you know, we're not going to get involved in that because you got to buy an expensive GPS unit. We'll just stick with the letterbox. Last spring, the Shaw Nature Reserve had a class on geocaching. Well, that sounds like fun. Let's go ahead and do that. Monday morning, I got on eBay and bought myself a GPS because it was so much fun. Like, this is cool. They do a lot of really cool classes out there all outside. We just finished a map and compass class. You know, they've got a cave there that I didn't know existed. I've walked past it before and didn't realize it was there. There's a really beautiful bluff overlook that I had never been to before, but we had a cache that took us to that. So then my daughter and I started geocaching. As of the end of June, I think we only had 7 because we'd go and we'd find one and that was it. Didn't quite understand the obsession. Hadn't been hooked yet. I had introduced a friend of mine to geocaching. She really loved it. She got a GPS unit, introduced her mother to it, so she's been off doing it. We finally got together one day and plotted out a few. I don't know exactly what set me off, but in Collinsville, we managed to get 8 of them in 3.5 hours because they're all like right around the downtown Collinsville area. And I just kind of plotted them all out and I said, this is cool. So one day we went and we did this. Well, then we started getting more and more. And, you know, now I have 95. What would that be? 87 of them since the beginning of August. So like in 4 months, I've done 87. And when we drive up to Chicago, I make sure I get caches along the route up and back. We were out caching one night until sunset. We were in Tuscola, Illinois, and we're finding this one last, and I keep an eye on the horizon because the sun is getting really close. It's like, if we don't find this in the next 10 minutes, and then my daughter found it. Inevitably, one of us will give up, and the other one will say, one more minute, and then we'll find it. So I'm active with Amanda's Girl Scout troop and now a little bit with the council, and they tried to have a letterboxing day. Nobody signed up for it. I guess they didn't know what it was. In fact, I had talked to my daughter about possibly doing a service project where we could raise some money for GPSs and start with the geocaching, and I contacted the council, and they had already bought some. So they've got 12 GPSs up there. I've now been certified in GPS. They just want to have caches just at their camps and have the girls do it just at camp. They don't really want to send them out into the general public. So I went to their little training thing, and I helped the other ladies. She had placed some caches, and I helped the other ladies find them. And so now I'm trained, and I'm able to train other troop leaders. And actually, they're starting a new program, Outdoor Adventure Resources Program, where if a troop leader doesn't want to take her kids into the woods or doesn't want to do anything like that, they can hire one of us facilitators to come out and take the troop. And so I'm one of the facilitators now for geocaching. I've seen more kids that just love doing this because fun, it's problem puzzle solving, and of course you get to that cache with all the stuff in it. I try to make sure when we do caches that some of ours have actual caches with toys because she doesn't like to do the micros. Amanda doesn't like to do the micros.
I don't either.
I don't in most cases, but to me the micros are challenges, whereas she just wants the toys and be done with. Seeing it, you know, through this group and just from some other people that I've talked to, it all seems to be 30 plus. You know, people with families, you know, or retired. Yes, I notice a lot of the retired people involved in this. Yeah, I don't see it with, like, the teenagers as much. You know, my niece really didn't care for it. She claims she's not a girly girl, but she definitely does not like the woods. I don't see it with the young adults that are trying to make careers yet. There's several caches here on campus, some of them in the deep woods, which are pretty nice ones. I had heard that the university doesn't like people to place caches out here. I think they're afraid of people getting hurt in the woods. Again, all the legalities.
Bring people who are not students on campus.
Right. Having people wander the woods who could get hurt, who could get injured, because there are wild animals in the woods, you know, not just deer, there's cougars. You know, everybody that I've met so far seems to be an outdoor person, seems to, you know, have the respect of nature. But like any sport, as you start getting other people in that may not have the respect, It's still a pretty good secret because most people I tell about it, they don't know about it, which in a way is good because it's kind of fun to be, I don't want to be an expert, but to have a skill that other people don't
have. Yeah, if everybody knew, you couldn't hide from muggles.
Right, exactly.
Because they all sit around, oh, looking for that cash, are you?
Right. Well, now I have run into people that we were in St. Charles in a park. It was a Saturday morning. We were coming up to the cash location, and there's a guy sitting there, and I'm kind of eyeing him. And you know, when it's just my daughter and I try to keep an eye on people anyway around us. I see this guy, and I look down, and he's holding one of the printouts. I said, so are you geocaching? He's like, yeah, sure. And he has to borrow a pen. Not even thinking, oh, yeah, sure. So I gave him one of our pens. We have a whole backpack full of stuff we carry with us, including first aid kit, including bug spray, sunscreen, thing that we would need, you know, because we've been scratched before, we've been burned before, we've been bug bitten before, you know. Yeah, we're here looking for it. It's like, okay, well, I know where it's at. I'm just not going to tell you. And so we looked and looked and looked and finally found it. Well, my daughter pulled it out and there was nothing in it. No log. And he's like, well, now I can give you the log.
Ah.
That's why he needed the pen because he was.
Was it micro?
Yeah, it was micro.
Which park was
it? It was the one right, it was behind the Boeing plant, right by where 370 bridge crosses over and you have to get off on 5th Street. And then after we were finished, we both walked back to our cars together talking. And when we got back, I didn't log it until Monday morning. I saw his name. He's like, yeah, we met two cats there and they loaned me their pen. It's like, that is so cool. I don't know why that's so cool, but we were in Alton looking for a second time for a cache, the one, the Lovejoy Memorial one. I don't know if you've been up there, and I swear I looked at that location and didn't see it because we had spent about half an hour there one time looking and looking, but it was getting dark. My daughter just gets freaked out by cemeteries to begin with, and the GPS was bouncing all over the place. Couldn't find it, and I was getting angry. It's like, I don't like caches outsmarting me. So then when we went back a second time, I finally found it. Well, before I did, and this young guy comes up, he just started talking, and he's like, so what are you doing? Because he could see me with the GPS, and we're talking about looking. I said, well, we're treasure hunting, and he was just so fascinated that he wouldn't leave until we found the cache. I started to get a little nervous. It's like, okay, is this guy okay? I mean, you know, he's not a big guy. I might be able to take him if he did anything, but, you know. And he said, my brother would really love something like that. When a woman and a child are looking, people usually don't give us a double take. I wonder sometimes, like, when men are doing these suspicious things, do you have...
Yeah, when I cache myself, I'm very cautious about if I drive up and I see it's in a playground area.
Oh, yeah.
If there's anybody there, go somewhere else.
But, you know, so I'm looking through these bushes and stuff. I've got the GPS, but they may not know what it is. And, of course, I'm walking back and forth, pacing it off. So I figured, you know, I saw some trash that, you know, some people have left some garbage there. And it's like, well, I'll act like I'm, you know, cleaning this. So I picked this up and I threw it back into the truck so much that I'm, you know, doing something suspicious. You know, this summer we had taken my nephew geocaching near his house in Indiana. There were a lot of leaves, a lot of bush cover. It was hot. It was buggy. We didn't spend a whole lot of time. We couldn't find this one cache. So I took him back the day after Thanksgiving. He had only 4 or 5 caches to my name the first time I took him up there. The second time I've got 90 caches to my name. So I knew a lot more about hiding places, and sure enough, I found it right away. It was under a tree root system and was buried under there. I never would have thought of looking there this summer. But I'm using this as a form of exercise. In September, October, when the weather was nice, it's like, okay, come on, we're going out caching because I need to get out. I need to get out there moving. Even Amanda has said how nice it is for us to do it together. We were really fans of the TV show National Treasure. They were given clues, they had to find clues, and they had to go to other locations for other clues. Every time we find a cache, like, this is just like National Treasure, you know? And it is. It's very much so. In fact, the one guy had a GPS. They had to find several places in the swampy area, and so he used his GPS to mark one because he wasn't sure if that was his first one or they had to come back to it. You know, we'll go finding something, and she's like, you know, this is real team building. I don't know where she found that phrase from, but she was helping me up a real steep slope. And, you know, I mean, she's fairly lightweight. I could easily pull her back, but she, you know, gave me a steadying hand and, you know, got up the house. This is very team building, Mom. It's like, yes, it is.
Do you know other cashers in the Edwardsville area?
Email back and forth with Joel Knapp. He's an instructor here. I knew that he was, and then he found out that I worked here. And then other than my friend Suzanne, not really, not too many of the other people I know. Who is Kitty Lynn? Or is it Kid Dylan? I'm not sure how to pronounce it. He gets all the first to finds in this area. In fact, when Suzanne placed the one over by Krieger's, I was so mad because she called me that next day that it was active, and she says, go ahead and try and see if you can get it. Well, no, he had already gotten it. He had gotten it like 5 o'clock in the morning. And every time we drive up to Chicago, we got 5 caches on the way up, 4 with my nephew the day after Thanksgiving, and then 4 more on the way back. You know, it's just a nice break because a lot of them are in just like little town parks and stuff, which are pretty nice.
Rest stops.
Yeah, I've been seeing more and more on the rest stops, yeah.
If there isn't a cash and a rest stop, there probably should be.
The two right up here north of Edwardsville aren't. I'm waiting to get to those. On I-55, there's a rest stop just south of Bloomington that has three of them in it because it's a really wooded area. And the one I've been to three times now, and I still can't find it. And it's been logged since I've been there, so somebody has found it.
Things like micros, one small leaf properly placed can make you miss the cache.
Oh, yes.
Completely. You have a specific cache picked out for your 100th?
No, not really.
You'll know when you get there?
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it is after 99, pretty much, yeah.
Is your daughter going to get her own GPS receiver for Christmas?
No. No, eventually I'd like to upgrade my GPS, and then I'll give her this other one.
Which one do you have?
Just the Garmin eTrex, the real cheap yellow one.
The yellow one?
Yeah. It was a used one, so who knows what had happened to it before I got it. You know, I needed to get one cheap because I didn't know if we were going to like doing this, and now we do. And she's afraid that if I get a better GPS, I'm going to pull her out more caching. She likes doing it, but, you know, after a while she gets bored with it. And, you know, especially if we find too many micros. You know, if we find enough of the full-size cache with all the toys in it, she's happy. But.
Yeah.
And if I find too many of them, and she doesn't, she doesn't like it. When she finds the caches, everything, oh, this is fun, but this is boring. I don't want to do this anymore. She's not spoiled or anything.
How'd you discover Slaga?
It was on one of the cache pages somebody had put on their Slaga members. So I looked it up and, oh, cool. And I figured, okay, good, another club to belong to. I belong to this pilot club, airplane club in St. Charles, and I was the president for 2 years and got really burnt out. It's like, oh, just what I need is another club to be involved in. But then, you know, we attended the picnic for the first time at Merrimack State Park. It's like, you know, those guys are pretty good. You know, I mean, they're crazy.
They're pretty crazy in a good way.
In a good way, exactly. They've got this obsession that I kind of share at this point. You know, you could do worse, you know. And what I liked is that a lot of the wives came along. You know, at the airplane club, a lot of the wives don't come along. You know, only out of 100 members, there's only 3 women involved. And, you know, it gets, excuse me, but a little old to be around men all the time. And so I was impressed to see. And not only that, but kids. There were a lot of kids there. And that's what my daughter likes, of course, you know, to be able to hang around with the kids. And she did make a friend towards the end as we were getting ready to leave because they were playing down by the river. Well, that's how my friend Suzanne first learned about geocaching. That I had told her about it when I first got involved in it. She was visiting her mom, and they were at a park or something. It was a statue. And she happened to look inside this hole that was in the statue and found a cache.
Just by accident.
She's like, that's what Laura's been talking about. So then she got involved in it, and then she got her mom involved in it. Haven't gotten into St. Louis much to do caching, but, you know, there's a lot of them. I was surprised, you know, all along the bike trails and all along the parks. And it gets to a point now where I'm looking at a map, and the geocaching map, and if I see a park without a cache in it, it's like, there's got to be a cache in every park.
You are still helping with Mogart, yeah.
Tell myself I'm not getting involved, and then I go, that should be fun. Please,
our expectations
everybody.
Are low.
Your expectations may be low, but I've never been to MOGA, so I'm anxious to see what that's like.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.